You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa, the fastest clothing in the world tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyons RAM. Today we are in Bologna.
Where are we, Lionel?
We are just next to the Basilica di San Luca in, well, above Bologna, the finish line of stage one of the Giro d'Italia 2019.
And it's underway, and first few riders are in a very odd, unusual situation with Tom Dumoulin going off first. What's the latest, Daniel?
Well, I think he went like a bit of a bag of spanners on the first half of the course. Anyway, everyone seems to be beating his intermediate time, so the time taken before the start of the climb. Nibali has beaten it, Roglic has beaten it, and Superman has beaten it. Superman is the leader in the clubhouse.
Miguel Angel Lopez. I should introduce ourselves as well. I'm Richard Moore. That's Lionel Byrne.
Hello, Richard.
And Daniel Freib.
Hello.
And we're here in Bologna. We're going to be meandering down the hill to report as the stage unfolds. But it's so strange, really, to have the riders going off in the order that they are. Tom Dumoulin, one of the big favourites, going off first. There's normally a huge build-up all day over several hours until the big favourites come at the end. But at the start here, we've got Dumoulin, Lopez, Superman, Nibali, Bob Jungels, Primoz Roglic.
You pronounce Superman like Bob Marley.
Well, the thing about the start order is it's directly reversed when compared to the profile of today's stage, isn't it? The first 8 kilometres are flat, and then it's a 2 kilometre climb flanked by the stunning portico all the way up. The crowds are absolutely sensational on the hill. It's a perfect time trial course to open a Grand Tour with, and because of the anticipated change in the weather a bit later on, rain showers and perhaps higher winds were anticipated later on, but the forecast has kind of changed. I'm not sure the rain's going to come in, but Simon Yates is the only major rider who is not going off in kind of the first wave, so it's going to be really interesting to see who the winners and losers are.
Here comes Nibali, Rich, any second. We think he's going to challenge Superman, certainly. We've seen one Italian, there he goes, we've seen one Italian sporting national treasure already today. Alberto Tomba, the skier, the slalom skier, was up here from Bologna. Nibali's just finished. What's his time?
Well, we would tell you from the screen, but they seem to have lost the pictures, and we were watching a film about penguins a minute ago.
Nibali's got the best time.
Nibali the best time. So already some surprises, but Roglic out on the course is going very quickly indeed.
Daniel, how did Alberto Tomba describe the climb here?
Like a black run.
Where are we now, Lionel?
We're in a bar in Bologna. The stage is over.
The stage is over?
Yeah.
We've just watched Simon Yates, haven't we, on the big screen, third last man to go, as we made our way back down the hill, and we're, as you say, in a bar in Bologna. What happened today, then, on stage one of the Giro?
Well, Primoz Roglic won pretty convincingly, didn't he, for Jumbo-Visma?
He did a madness, didn't he?
It was an impressive performance. He was a lot quicker than everybody else. Simon Yates, second fastest at 19 seconds. Vincenzo Nibali at 23. Miguel Angel Lopez.
Superman.
At 28 seconds. Tom Dumoulin, also
set
at 28 seconds.
That's a reggae beat now, I think.
That was the top five. Probably not far away from what we would have thought would be the top five, save kind of the shuffling of the order. The disappointments or surprises perhaps were Bob Jungels only in 13th place, 46 seconds down on Roglic. Rafał Majka, impressive performance by him, at sixth place at 33 seconds, and better than Davide Formolo, who was 50 seconds down. So already a little bit of a shake-up in the general classification. We kind of get a few hints as who is going to feature in this race. But, of course, there's a
a lot of racing to go before we really hit any significant climb. There is a lot of Italy left. So day one done, and it all resumes again tomorrow. But the San Luca climb was really special, wasn't it? We were all up there at the top, and we spoke to a few riders as they crossed the line, one of whom was Britain's James Knox of De Koenig Quickstep, riding his first Grand Tour. He was in 22nd place, pretty impressive result for him on his Grand Tour debut, and this is what he made of the climb.
I think it's really difficult, actually, because obviously I think the bulk of the benefit's going to be going, you know, saving your energy to the end, but then it's hard not to get a little bit carried away in the start of any time trial, so let alone one with a nasty 2K climb to finish.
And there was tremendous crowds there as well. Did that affect you, or were you able to sort of zone out from that?
No, I really felt it on the climb. Like, you turn into a wall of people straight away. A lot of shouts in, a few Gordon Jameses in amongst it, so that was nice. But just trying really hard just to focus on my own effort. But yeah, the crowd does give you something extra.
Impressionante, c'era.
Impressionante, says Giulio Ciccone. Impressive. Amazing.
Grandissimo.
Sam, just tell me, what was the atmosphere like in that incredible cycling stadium, cycling arena, the San Luca climb?
Yeah, amazing, amazing, amazing way to start the Giro d'Italia. The Giro is still so long way to go. As long time, felt fine today. That's the most important thing. And Roglic is probably just outstanding, so that's what it is.
Ma è un'atmosfera magica perché.
Domenico Pozzovivo says that he thinks he's done this climb, San Luca, more than anyone else ever in history, possibly in races. He's done the Giro dell'Emilia many, many times, and he says that it was magical to do it in the Giro d'Italia.
Speciale.
But Primoz, who is probably Maglia Rossa now, so dream coming true for me and for the team.
How strong is Primoz at the moment? Because the gap he has over everyone else is big.
It's incredible. He's so good. He's just from another level now, and hope we can continue this until the end of the Giro.
3 weeks is a long time to come in and this strong. Is that a concern, or is just a good position to be in?
Yeah, we had a good plan, and I think he's in the good shape now. We can do this until the end.
And lastly, what did you make of the climb, and did you have a chance to sample the atmosphere on your way up?
Yeah, I just go full gas. It was super nice. I feel like a good atmosphere here, and so happy to be in Italy.
The last voice you heard there was Laurens de Ploes of Jumbo-Visma. He's going to be a very important teammate for Primoz Roglic, you would imagine.
A very good performance as well by him today.
Yeah, it was.
He was eighth in the end.
35 seconds down, in the same time as Theo Gegenhardt of Team Ineos. Should mention him as well.
Another noteworthy performance, definitely.
Indeed. Yep. But when de Ploes came through the finish line and came to a stop, I approached him and said, can I ask a question or two? And he said, yes, fine, but can you tell me where I am, what my result was? And I was, I don't really know. So I had to look it up on my phone.
Valuable data.
And, I managed to get onto Pro Cycling Stats pretty quickly and tell him where he was and how he was doing, how he'd done.
The scene. Yeah.
And I asked him, I wanted to ask him, well, now you know your result, are you pleased with that? But before I could open my mouth and ask the question, our friend Renard from Belgian TV nipped in and spent the next 5 minutes talking to de Ploes. But then he was good enough to answer a few questions, and I think,
although did he not actually initially make to go away?
Well, I
looked up your result for you.
Yeah, he was going to roll down the hill and go off, and I was like, how?
Oh,
can
really, hang on a second,
that was my data. Megabytes of data.
all right anyway, but they will be presumably absolutely delighted by that today.
Napalm, we also heard in that montage from Giulio Ciccone, who is in the blue jersey for best climber tonight. His time on the San Luca climb, 6 minutes, 2 seconds. I think that's a record for San Luca. There have been a lot of pictures going around. People have been sharing the famous photo of Fiorenzo Magni from the Giro time trial. In which year was it? 1956. 2.4-kilometer time trial up the San Luca climb. His time then, so slightly longer, because today the climb is 2.1 kilometers. But Magni's time, 8 minutes and 23 seconds. So 2 minutes and 21 seconds slower than Ciccone for a slightly longer course.
Not a real surprise, considering 50 years have elapsed,
really.
And technology has improved quite a bit.
I think this is clear evidence of foul play.
We didn't see many Bike changes, did we? Most of them just stayed on the time trial bikes, and it was, you know, quite kind of interesting how many of the riders went up quite steep sections of the climb on the tri bars. Simon Yates out the saddle almost all the way up, and you know he wasn't that quick on the flat section, but really fast on the climb itself.
Napalm, you've got the results in front of you. One thing that occurred to me, since we are in the city known as La Grasa, the fat one, it struck me that lighter riders did well today. And one common theme among the guys who may be disappointed slightly, the good time trialists who didn't have such a good performance today, the Jungelses, the Dumoulins, they're much bigger guys. And you know, we all saw today how steep that climb is. So I don't know, was that, I mean, if you look down the top 10, top 15, a lot of light guys in there, aren't there?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. And I think that the conundrum about whether to swap bikes, I don't think it really was much of a conundrum in the end, when you see that of all the riders that were in the top positions, they just rode the one bike on the whole course. What was quite interesting was how long they stayed in time trial position or at least stayed in the saddle. It was a mountain goat type of climb, but they didn't really attack it in a kind of mountain goat sort of way. I thought that was quite interesting. Also, the speed on the flat was absolutely incredible. I mean, touching 70 kilometers an hour average on that section. But of course, the most interesting thing about the way the day panned out was that all of the top riders, bar Simon Yates, went in the first wave of riders, the first 25 or so riders. And the reason for that was because of the weather forecast was anticipating a bit of rain in the late afternoon, early evening, and presumably all of the teams thought, well, we'll put our best guys off early so they get the best conditions. It'll be really interesting to find out tomorrow from Matt White, you know, what the thinking was behind Simon Yates going off so late. And in the end, it didn't make any difference because no rain fell. And if anything, probably the wind dropped a little bit in the afternoon, which may account for his slightly slower time on the flat.
Also the issue of the hot seat. And Roglic was stuck up at the top waiting, sitting, I think, with his girlfriend or partner anyway, in the sun for 2 or 3 hours. You know, you do wonder how much teams take that into consideration.
You mean winning is perhaps, you know, you wouldn't want to be up there all afternoon, sat there, because it's not just about the hot seat, is it? They'd have to stay up there for the press conference and for the podium presentation and all the rest of it. So you're right, he was up there for, what, 3 hours and something, waiting.
Is that a reason to not to go off first when you think it's going to rain later?
Nobody's going to tank, are they, and say, well, I'll try and finish second. You know, I mean, Roglic has got 19 seconds in the bank on Yates.
As it turned out, presumably he would have had the same ride if he'd gone off last today.
True.
The fastest clothing in the World Tour, the home of cycling with character. Ride and watch with Rafa in 2019 as they partner with EF Education First and Canyons Run.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa, our headline sponsor, without whose support we wouldn't be here covering the Giro d'Italia from start to finish. This is the first of our nightly episodes from the Giro. Big thanks to Rafa. They will be following, of course, EF Education First throughout the Giro and producing EF Gone Racing films. Have a look at them at rafa.cc. Subscribe to Rafa Films on YouTube. And we say a big thanks to Rafa. Moving on, chaps, looking at the results. I mean, you said, Lionel, that the identity of the top sort of four or five riders wasn't a huge surprise, but I would say Nibali was a surprise. Second for a lot of the day, third in the end, and I think that was a surprise. When we look at Nibali, he's obviously a former winner, but he's a guy who often comes to the boil late in the race, doesn't he? And he's obviously started this Giro in really great shape. Not a specialist time trialist either.
No, I mean, a guy who knows the San Luca climb certainly very well. He's pretty light. He is in good form, it's well documented. So I don't think that was that much of a surprise. The big negative surprise for me was Dumoulin, particularly because I think he thought he'd done a pretty good ride, and he was quite surprised by how quickly he was overtaken, by how many people he was overtaken. He hasn't done too many time trials this year. I think he's done one individual time trial and a couple of team time trials, but there's no problem. I mean, I was told today, I was asking a few people, he's been working on with his new time trial bike, the Cervelo, since last September, way before they
came on board as official sponsors. And as regards this, this comment that he made, which has now been the subject of a lot of scrutiny, that he wasn't going as well as last year, certainly the feeling at Sunweb is that that was taken very much out of context. He was asked about a specific day in a specific race, and he said, well, basically, I didn't go as well as I did last year. So I think that point was with regard to Liège-Bastogne-Liège more than anything else. And I think he thinks he's going pretty well. But I think there's also a sort of one that certainly will be after today. There's a widespread acknowledgement and acceptance that Roglic is just off the charts at the moment.
Richard said on the way down, as we walked back through the stunning portico, through the crowds, watching the second half of the race come up, and kind of slightly discombobulated by this upside down running order that we had,
because normally upside down ski jump.
No,
a lot of
ski jumper reference.
A lot of Roglic fans, though. I mean, a lot of fans with. He's got this kind of logo with a set of wings, like angel's wings almost, Roglic. And there's quite a Roglic fan club up there today, Slovenians and other people, supporting him. And you do feel like he's got a lot of momentum behind him. He's got a very strong team. Laurens de Ploeg is going to be really important, I think. The other big surprise, though, was Superman.
Superman and the Whalers.
that was probably the best time trial of his career, no?
Yeah, it was on a very atypical course,
But he went very quickly on the.
He was
quicker than Dumoulin on the flat.
He was the gaps between the riders on the flat were tiny though, weren't they?
Yeah, it was on the same second, admittedly, but you still wouldn't have imagined that before today.
No. But Roglic has got momentum, hasn't he? Has from the start of the year won the UAE Tour, won Tirreno Adriatico, won the Tour of Romandy. 3-week-long stage races. I remember famously, Daniel, last year when Simon Yates was, you know, pinching all those seconds in the Giro and cementing building a lead in the pink jersey, that, you know, in quite a methodical way, just as and when, nibbling away when he could. And you kind of dismissed sort of 10 days' work as well. He's just won a Tirreno Adriatico. And at the time, I was completely dismissive of that comment because I thought it was unfair. But actually, that was a very good point, and probably was right. The thing here is, we know Roglic can go over 3 weeks. He's done it in the Tour de France. You know, top five position,
fourth in
the Tour de France. So his staying power is probably not in question. But there is a difference still between sort of being fourth and being first, and it is something we will always say, but. Is there the danger of being too hot too soon when the final week is where this race will be decided? It's okay, great, to take 19 seconds in the first 8 kilometres, but there's now a real kind of almost a dead patch as far as the GC riders are concerned until next Sunday's time trial in San Marino, where, of course, he could make some more gains potentially, because that's another time trial with this kind of, you know, backloaded climbing at the end.
The other thing with Roglic is that I think he's naturally quite an aggressive rider, and he doesn't like sitting in the peloton and letting his team control things, and even when he is the strongest rider. And I think on terrain like you find at the Giro, which invites attacks, you know, he might be enticed into doing too much, maybe in the same way that Simon Yates was last year.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, cycling podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's Seb Piquet, race radio at the Tour de France, to remind us to tell you that this episode of our Giro coverage is sponsored by The Week. Now, The Week, Rich, it saves you time, it filters the news, and it's given me a range of views and opinions and coverage of stories that I probably wouldn't see if I just stuck to my usual reading routine, because it pulls stories from across the spectrum. It gives you a fuller picture, and the thing that I really like about it is that everything is really bite-sized, so you can absorb quite a lot of information in one sitting. You were flicking through The Week on our flight over to Bologna. What caught your eye, Rich?
I was reading it very closely. A story about Jeff Bezos, the world's richest man, the man behind Amazon, of course, who wants to colonise the moon. He made an announcement recently in Washington. It was, said the New York Times, a carefully choreographed event akin to the announcement of a new iPhone. The Daily Telegraph spoke of his desire to colonise space, and The Guardian said that the tech billionaire's space race is really heating up. He wants to go to the moon, he wants to take people to the moon. He forecast that the solar system could eventually support a population of a trillion humans. Then we'd have 1,000 Mozarts and 1,000 Einsteins, he says. Probably 1,000 Eddie Merckxes as well.
Wow. Yeah, when does a tour of the moon start?
Exactly.
Well, we'll be there if we're fortunate enough. The week, it doesn't just cover billionaires, gazillionaires. It covers everything from science, sport, food, the arts, and news and politics, of course. It's kind of the anti-echo chamber. And if you want to join thousands of people who trust The Week as their essential curated news source, try it yourself for free. You can get 6 issues for free if you go to theweek.co.uk/offer and use the code cycling. That's theweek.co.uk/offer and then enter the code cycling.
For Giro d'Italia.
Hi, Giro d'Italia. What it means for you? You are English.
Scottish.
Are you Scottish?
Oh, very important. Very important distinction.
The Bologna is one of the greatest city. She get all people all the time. It's by to the university, but the university is nothing. It's the people they live in.
Well, that wasn't Marlon Brando. Daniel, who was that?
Well, it was our host last night, wasn't it? The restaurateur, I think the owner of La Drogheria de la Rosa. Very appropriate, of the chemist of the rose or of the pink. Probably actually slightly inappropriate vis-a-vis the Giro d'Italia. And Giro d'Italia.
You said earlier the Bologna is known as the fat one, also the red one and the learned one. It's got these three names, isn't it, for its history of its university and its politics.
Very much so, Rich. We will obviously be focusing on the food because we're neither learned, well, red, well, maybe. We ate very well, didn't we, Napalm? We had a couple. We've already had a few specialities.
I was stunned to arrive in Bologna and you revealed that the mayor of Bologna is trying to outlaw.
I've been having correspondence
Bolognese.
With him.
Have you been in touch with him?
I've been having correspondence with him. I think I might speak to him tomorrow about his campaign to rid the world of spaghetti alla bolognese. It's a long old story, this. I don't think you want me to go into it. There's a big battle going on between Bologna and Napoli. Napoli says that it should be spaghetti alla bolognese. In Bologna, they say spaghetti have never existed. In Bologna, they're vermicelli, which are little worms, but they would never have them with ragu, with bolognese sauce anyway.
Is this going to appear in episode 1 of Kilometre Zero on Monday?
I think it will be mentioned.
Excellent.
Kilometre Zero, well, nice mention, Lionel. Kilometre Zero, sponsored by Hans Grohe. Thank you very much to Hans Grohe. 9 episodes of Kilometre Zero coming during the Giro, Monday, Wednesday and Friday. And episode 1, Daniel, is going to be on...
It's going to be called La Grassa, the fat one.
Excellent. But on
it's not about you. It's not about you, Napalm.
Very hard.
Oh,
well, he pointed.
I didn't, Lionel.
That was some pointing. Yeah, that was.
I didn't point.
It can't be you. It can't be you anyway, because it's feminine.
Anyway, on the bolognese, is the objection to the sauce being called bolognese or to the fact that it shouldn't be served with spaghetti?
On both counts, really. Certainly should never be eaten with spaghetti, and the actual bolognese sauce, the real one, has tuna in it, believe it or not.
Oh, this is ridiculous. This is ridiculous.
The first one ever sort of made and ever called that in Bologna had tuna in it.
Well, yeah. We'll get to the bottom
and
of this.
Rich is going to hate this, but there was recently some kind of... Remember last year we had the Tiramisu World Cup? Recently there was a bolognese or ragù alla bolognese World Cup. Napoli versus Bologna, and Napoli won.
Wow.
Why am I going to hate that? I like the sound of that. I mean, it's proper food.
You were very ambivalent last year about...
Tiramisu is, you know...
Tippy-tappy.
Yeah.
Anyway, I've had ragu for every meal so far, and I'm going to continue that tonight. But we need to finish the podcast before we can go for dinner.
Beef, good link, good segue. There's been a bit of beef about Simon Yates' comments... in the press conference yesterday.
Well, you were there, Daniel, and Simon Yates was pretty bullish, wasn't he?
incredibly bullish, Rich, on, well, there were two questions on which he was particularly bullish. And one, he was asked who's the favourite for the Giro d'Italia, and he said me. And
there's no problem with that. There should be more of that.
Yeah, there should, but it was the...
If you're an elite sports person and you're trying to win an event, then what's wrong with saying, I think I'm the favourite? I think it's to be applauded, but...
It was the withering sort of manner in which it was delivered, I think, which was quite impressive.
He's the only one who has to live up to that. So
he's also the only one in the field who won the last Grand Tour on the calendar.
Correct.
So.
And the other thing that came out of the press conference has been talked about a lot today is this comment about he made in an interview with Rouleur magazine that his rivals should be shitting themselves. This is getting all a bit scatological for me.
Tom Dumoulin may very well be.
Well, there you go. He stood by that.
History repeats itself.
He stood by... Well, it's funny you should mention that, London, because I understand that that Yates's press conference and some of the comments he made in the press conference have been the subject of some mirth in the Sunweb camp today amongst the riders. So I don't know whether his intention was to sort of fire up his rivals, but I think he might have done that.
But you're absolutely right, Lionel. I relish that, you know, and I think we saw that kind of beef a couple of years ago when Dumoulin was leading the race and had a lot of beef with Nibali and...
Quintana,
yeah, and it was great. It was refreshing. It was good. It was
typical of the Giro.
Typical of the Giro, but unfortunately not typical in the social media age where things get blown up. And I suspect that Simon Yates is going to be immune to that sort of worry. I don't think he cares.
I mean, he's not even on MySpace, is he?
I don't think he... You spoke to him, though, briefly. Shall we hear from him?
Let's talk to him. Well, let's hear from him briefly.
If you just look at the profile of this Giro, I mean, it really sort of stands out how straightforward it looks in the first 10 days. Has your preparation taken that into account? I mean, are you coming in undercooked?
I wouldn't say undercooked, but a lot of my training has gone really specifically for the end of the race. There are going to be some really big days back to back. And just the build-up has been more about that. I think the race will lend itself, like I said before, to being conservative anyway. I think some of these stages in the earlier part are actually trickier than everyone, you know, everyone's saying, oh, it's going to be just 10 flat days, super easy, but actually some of them are quite tricky. So we'll be careful.
Tricky because obviously there's a risk of crashes, or also because there might be climbs that people haven't really paid any attention to?
Both. Just, you know, smaller roads, also really quite technical roads. Just things like that, you know, maybe a bit of wind here and there. You don't really know it.
How much do you study the route? I mean, how much detail do you know those stages?
In first person, not at all. Only the time trials, really. But the rest of the stages, I look just online and in more and more details. We get closer to the race.
When do you do that? Like tonight, do you spend like an hour looking at the prologue course or online? Or?
Well, the prologue course was a bit easier because I did GP Emilia a couple of times. Yeah. I never finished, unfortunately, because it's too late in the season.
You got that climb five times in that, so you did.
Exactly, I've probably done it already 10 times or whatever, so as much as I need to, really. You know, we also have Google Maps Velo Viewer and all this sort of stuff to really look at, so I go for it pretty well.
The Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much indeed to Science in Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. It's an anniversary, chaps. 3 years ago, Science in Sport came on board with us and supported us at the Giro d'Italia initially. Kilometer Zero and the regular podcast.
We wouldn't have been at that Giro, but
no,
for
they
Science
were
Sports.
Very, very important early sort of partner for us, and subsequently we hooked up with Science of Sport on a long term relationship, and we're very, very grateful to them for their support. You can get 25% off all your Science of Sport products at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25. But yeah, thank you to Science and Sport. We raise a glass to Science and Sport tonight and throughout the Giro. Why not?
Mm.
We heard from Simon Yates just before the break there. You were going to say something, Lionel?
I was going to just sing the praises of the course and the atmosphere and the way today... sing the praises for everything except the way that it kind of played out over the afternoon. It was slightly unfortunate that it was front loaded. I was initially very excited because it was like, wow, we're straight into it. There's no slow burn, no build, no wait for the big riders to come. The problem was that within sort of 25 minutes, it was kind of done, really, than just waiting for Simon Yates. And thank goodness, really, that Mitchelton Scott didn't choose to put Simon Yates off early, because that would have really flattened the day. And it was noticeable that a lot of people were filtering back down the hill while riders were still coming up. And, you know, it was a very different atmosphere by the looks of it, in the shadows at sort of 8 o'clock compared to the sunshine of 5 o'clock and the kind of the festivities and the party atmosphere on the climb. But everything else about it was the kind of perfect recipe for the opening of a Grand Tour.
It was a day that peaked a little bit too early, wasn't it? It was like Simon Yates at the Giro last year.
It just went off a bit too quickly.
But the setting was spectacular. The atmosphere up there was brilliant.
The noise getting caught in the portico.
Oh, it was
and
wonderful. Yeah,
echoing up the hill. The way that the road went, where we stood on that Z bend, the really really steep part. We're speculating about how steep that was, but Daniel, you said it must be 20%+ that corner. You know, reminiscent of the Mur de Huy from Flesh Wallonne in the sense of how difficult it was.
And double the length.
And double the length, exactly. Yeah, real test.
We heard earlier on from Lawrence de Plus, who's set to have an important role. I had a chat at the top with Chris Yule Jensen, who was part of that Giro team last year with Simon Yates, and he's got a very important job as well this year. Let's hear what he had to say.
How was that? I mean, one of the more difficult time trials, I guess.
Yes and no. Difficult the last 3K or 2K, definitely. But one of the more beautiful prologues and time trials I've done in a while. Fantastic scenery. The fans have come out early in support of all us riders, and makes it all more enjoyable to get a Grand Tour kicked off. I think for a lot of us riders, then it's a question of blowing out the cobwebs and making sure that you sort of brush off all the dust that's been landing on the legs last couple of days, because it's always a bit of a tricky period. You train and prepare for a Grand Tour, and then you spend the week leading up to it trying to recover as much as possible, and then you're always a little bit on edge in terms of how you react to being so fresh. And that's where a prologue like this is just perfect, because you look after yourself, you do your own thing, and then you have 2K of solid climbing to make sure you empty yourself well and truly.
Had word of Roglic's time filtered back to the Mitchelton Scott camp before your ride?
It wasn't a split time that was being referred to in my radio. I think the only thing Whitey made sure to remind me of was to make sure I stay on both tires, and just to get through in one piece, and not overdo it, and just make sure I'm feeling good by myself afterwards. So yeah.
And Simon is obviously very very confident. I think he said in his press conference yesterday just how confident he is. How does that make you guys feel?
I think it is fantastic to be around such a young but an experienced rider character such as Simon. He really is capable of just taking everything in his stride. Really, it doesn't affect him, and he's always able to maintain a level head over, certainly with his, especially with his teammates and his colleagues, staff, and everyone else included. And it filters through the team. Myself, my teammates, the staff, the mechanics, the sports directors, the Swannies, you know, it's just, it's pretty cool. And I think it's obvious for people who follow him in the press that he's a cool customer. But he's sympathetic, he's serious, he's a laugh. But he also has seven teammates who are going to put it on the line for him.
Well, I mean, you were part of the Giro team last year. He's talked about unfinished business. Do you sort of feel that as well coming back?
Yeah, but I mean, the last person to have won a Grand Tour was Simon. So we were watching the highlights in the bus before the start, where yours were went through, obviously, the Giro and everything that included, five stage wins and a slightly leaving on a bit of an unfortunate note GC-wise. Thankfully, then the resume of 2018 finished with Simon on the podium in Madrid. So there's absolutely no reason to us to be confident in his abilities. And yeah, just got to take it one day at a time, really. Could be pissing rain 200 kilometers tomorrow, so we've got our hands full already. Now it's just a question of getting back and trying to recover.
So that was Chris Yule Jensen, the Irish Dane, who rides for Mitchelton Scott, and he's become a very important man for them in what is a very strong team. Mikael Nieve, Brent Buchwalter, it's a really really well equipped team to support Simon Yates. We should wrap things up for our first day at the Giro.
Who's going to win tomorrow? We're going to Fucecchio, the home of Andrea Taffy.
He's not going to win.
You know, I'm going to wear my Andrea Taffy visor for the podcast tomorrow because I've been running in it the last 2 days.
It's like a golf thing, isn't it?
Well, this is a Mapei Quickstep casquette with the top cut off. And restyle it into a visor.
I couldn't do that. I'd end up with just a big pink circle on the top of my head.
You're gonna wear that for the podcast.
I'm
gonna
wear it for
tomorrow.
The podcast.
Great.
We're going into Tuscany tomorrow.
Well, who is going to win? I mean, it's a sprint stage tomorrow, no? Or is it?
Might think a break stage. I mean, everyone's fresh, because aren't they?
Very, very quickly. This is now Jumbo-Visma's dilemma, isn't it? They have the pink jersey, but I would suspect they would not want to defend it in the conventional sense of putting people on the front chasing things down.
No, but they're going to struggle to lose it, aren't they?
Yeah. They will, because the sprinters will be so far back that, you know, time bonuses might take them a few days to catch up. But, you know, having the jersey and defending the jersey are two very different things. So I anticipate them just sailing through and saying,
they don't have it, yeah.
And being fairly open with certainly De Koenig Quickstep and saying, look, we're not going to ride. I could be proved wrong, but the onus will be on De Koenig tomorrow,
yeah.
I'd have thought.
Yeah, Elia Viviani. Surely the favourite, Gaviria as well. Anyway, we'll join you again tomorrow night. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
What are we going to eat tonight?
It's obvious. I mean, Lionel's already said.
Bologna. Do you know bologna? That comes from Bologna.
Yeah.
The term.
It's a soft.
Bologna is really mortadella, which is the famous sort of sausage meat from
soft,
Bologna.
Soft sliced meat.
I think we're going to be lucky to get a meal at this time. Time's marching on, isn't it?
Yeah. Vamos. Let's go.
Okay, thanks, Daniel.
Se lo mangiano le femmine.